the stove.
Yeah, are you okay with it? It's quite One Direction-y, isn't it? Or maybe Westlife? Westlife, yeah.
Halfway through this, I need to get up and be like,
we'll do the key change. Yeah, that's fine. I've heard me sing, but I don't think we would want that too much. Connie, do you know any of these folks? Okay, do you want to tell these folks a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your life, and who you are, what you do, and all that?
Okay, life story. I'll try and keep it short. So, I'm Connie. I'm 30 years old. I have two little kids, who I'll tell you a wee bit more about later. Should I just go back to the story?
Yeah.
I was born in Belgium. I suppose my own journey of faith happened kind of gradually. It wasn't like a big lightning bolt kind of thing. Became a Christian in my mid-teens. Couldn't tell you really when it was. Just kind of did the circuit, you know, kind of went to Christian things. Came along church.
Christian
and
junkie?
Yeah. Well, kind of not even really. I was a wee bit just like a teenager, you know, that just ended up at these things. And I couldn't really tell you. But I guess in my mid-teens something happened where I thought, yes, I really do believe this and I kind of want to take this seriously. And I guess a wee bit about me and my kind of dreams for life. There were only two things I really wanted out of life personally. The first was to make a living out of being creative, and the second was a family. And those were the only things I really, really wanted. Pretty straightforward, I guess.
Can we pick up on the first thing?
Yes.
Maybe the creative dream, and do you want to tell us a wee bit about how that has kind of gone, how that developed?
Yeah. Okay, so did art for A level, as many people do, and then thought I might quite like to go to art college, so did that. But I have to go back a wee bit. So in school, I met this guy. Like all good stories start out, you know, met this guy. Actually went out with his friend first. Before it's a really good story. And we started out as friends. It was a good way to kind of kick things off because we got to know each other. And about 2 years later, I kind of was like, I think I kind of like this guy a wee bit. And turned out he liked me too. We're both into pretty much exactly the same things. It was a wee bit freaky. We were kind of like same music, same sense of humour, just everything the same. And he wanted to go to art college as well. He was a year older than me. And his name was Craig, by the way. I should just get that out there. So we both went off to uni together. I skipped a year and we went off to start uni at the same time. And we did a degree called Design for Visual Communication. That's what it was called. It's now called Graphic Design and Illustration. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, what I studied at uni. And it was great. And Craig and I were very happy. And in second year of uni, like absolute mentals, we got married. Because that's what you do in the middle of uni.
As you do, yeah.
You know, Christians, lipstick. But our thinking was, well, why not? Why not get married now? You know, it's going to happen anyway, so we might as well do it when we're skint in the middle of uni. So that was that. And when we graduated, again, we were kind of risky people, I guess. You think about it, like, you're getting married, like, super young. And then we came out of uni and we thought, right, well, we should go and get jobs in graphic design. But never once to do anything simply. We thought, we'll just start our own business, because that'll be easy. And we actually started our business in August 2008, which, if anybody can remember, September 2008 was the financial crash. So basically a couple of weeks before everything went skew-whiff. And in our first year of business, we barely made enough money to actually feed ourselves. Like, it was absolutely ridiculous. And but that was kind of the way we did it, you know. And it was good because it felt like a wholesome work, and it felt like it was kind of kingdom work as well. You know, it wasn't just us out grafting for a living, because we were able to kind of use the skills that God had given us, as we believed it.
Can you tell me more about the kingdom bit then, the work, and just what that looked like? That did. Loads of Christian websites then, or what is that?
There were some, like, but okay. You know, that was kind of, I guess the way we looked at it was everything we did was, you know, it was with Christ at the centre. So even if we were working like a corporate kind of job, we always wanted to kind of weave kind of our faith into that somehow. That doesn't mean like sticking like a wee cross and like like mini in the corner or something, but I suppose it outworked itself in different ways. But it was about doing business ethically. It was about just seeking God first in the clients that we worked with, and just trying to kind of keep him at the centre of what we were doing. And the business kind of started to grow, gain a bit of momentum. Like I said, it was 2008, so, you know, I have to do the maths. What's that, 8 years ago?
Yeah.
Yes. I went to our college, guys. Maths not my strong point. So, yeah, things were kind of gaining a bit of momentum. And then in our personal life as well, things were kind of moving in the same direction. So, like I say, we were totally skint when we first got married, and we continued to be pretty much skint as we went along. But, and also, it's the old thing that if you're self-employed, people won't give you a mortgage, stuff like that. So we kind of knew we needed to graft for a couple of years before we could do that, like, normal grown-up people thing and, like, put roots down. All, like, Northern Irish people love doing that, don't they? Like, buying houses and stuff. So it was, let's think, when was it? May 2014, we're jumping way ahead.
Yeah, so someone else came along around that time as well. Your daughter?
My daughter?
Yep.
The child? Yeah. It's not awful. I'm telling you guys about how we bought a house before I'm telling you about the love of my life, my daughter. Yeah, she came along in 2012, and she was much, much wanted, much loved.
Okay, brilliant. And you were skipping on a wee bit then to 2014.
Yeah.
Basically,
the in-between years, there was just a lot of hard work and a lot of late nights and a lot of, like, grafting.
Okay, so you've got this flourishing design business. You had these two hopes you were talking about, this family and this kind of creative business. Life sorted.
Yep.
Life going well. Do you want to talk a little bit about December 2014 and just what happened then?
Yeah, okay. So, like I said, in the May prior to that, December, we just finally kind of got our feet on the property ladder and all that fun. And then in September of that year, I found out that I was expecting again, which was lovely news. We were really pleased with that. And all these, like, big changes happening. And the business was doing really well. We had two members of staff, and we moved to new premises, and everything was just growing and growing and growing. And it just felt like we had this really strong sense of, like, you know, God is coming with us. We're doing this together, you know, and it was kind of momentous. And then it was the 20th of December 2014. I went out on a Saturday morning for a driving lesson because I was learning to drive at age 29. I thought, right, I'm expecting my second child. I really do need to learn to drive now. It was that old thing, Craig and I worked together, so, like, he could just chauffeur me everywhere. But I kind of thought, yeah, two kids, kind of got to do this driving thing. And I was out on driving lesson, pretty normal morning, came home, and just felt something wasn't right. And in a nutshell, long story short, I found Craig dead in our house. At that moment in time, I had no idea what had happened to him. He looked very peaceful. And I'm just going to, like, cut a long story short for everybody who's wondering what actually happened to him. I'm sure you've heard of sudden adult death. It's the kind of thing that tends to happen to athletes and people that are doing, like, high performance kind of activities. In Craig's case, he had a thing called Brugada syndrome, which is very, very rare. It's so rare that they still don't even really know much about it. It only got a name in the 90s. And actually, like, the Brugada brothers are, like, on Facebook, and you can message them and things like that. Like, it's just so, it's so new. So basically what happened was his heart just stopped, and it was so sudden. And I suppose that's one minor relief for me to know that, you know, it was so instantaneous that he doctors have told me that it was very unlikely he would have even known what was happening to him. But boy, did I know what was happening to me at that moment. I was 16 weeks pregnant, and our daughter was 2.5. And thankfully, she wasn't with him at the time. And I guess this is where things started to kind of unravel for me completely.
So are you able to talk us through maybe the next few weeks or the next few months and just what that looked like for you in the midst of being plunged into this sudden grief?
Yeah, well, I suppose originally it was just this confusion, like absolute unbelievable confusion. It didn't make any sense. Like, I just said cheerio to him, and away I went out the door and said, here, make sure you've got, like, the house cleaned up for lunch because the family's coming. And then I just remember in those moments following, it was just total confusion, and I kept saying, like, what is this? That just this phrase I just kept repeating over and over again, what is this? And I suppose for me, I was thinking, like, God, this is not part of the plan. And I'm a planner, I'm one of those 5-year plan people, and I always have been, even since I was a child. Like, when I was 10, I was thinking about when I was going to be 15, and when I was 15, I was thinking about what do I want to do when I was 21. And all of a sudden, I'm 29 and a pregnant widow. And it was never, ever part of the plan. And because there was no warning, I suppose the weeks that followed were very tumultuous. You know, we were just trying to find out what happened to him. And then when that started to come together, I guess there was a slight sense of peace just in getting to the bottom of the confusion. But then began my journey of, so what now? You know, and I guess a lot of people, when they're bereaved in a kind of surprising and shocking way, anger kind of comes to the foreground. I'm going to confess that I have never once felt angry, and I don't know why that is, because as a child, I was a really angry child, and I was a very angry teenager as well, and, you know, like, full angst. But I don't know why anger just never became part of my grieving process, and it still isn't.
So if anger wasn't there, there were other things that were, so
yeah,
grief, doubt, questions.
Yeah, I suppose it was just
frustration, do you want?
Yeah, there was just a massive amount of doubt. I guess because I've been so, you know, that feeling you're sure of something, and then it turns out that wasn't actually the case, so then you're like, well, I can't be sure of anything from now on, you know, and that was my thing about God. It was, okay, God, you told us to set up this business, you told us to start a family, you told us to do all these things, and then the rug just got pulled out from under me. And at that point I was just like, I just didn't know if anything was true. And I don't really feel like my faith ever truly dissipated, you know, it was always there, there was always something. And I felt really like God was saying to me, right, Connie, this is it, this, you're standing at a crossroads right now and you get to decide. And I suppose one of the defining features of my character is that I can't stand hypocrisy, and it's like all these different things that I could put up with, but hypocrisy is this thing that just grates me. I don't know why. Maybe it's a good thing that kind of bothers me.
Bother Jesus things.
See, there you go. Just trying to be Christ-like, but it just came to this point where I felt like God was saying, if you just turn your back on me now, you're just making a big hypocrite out of all those years before where you put your hands in the air and you said, Jesus, I love you, because this was actually I never said this wasn't going to happen, you know, and I was never guaranteed like this kind of 2.4 happy family, perfect kind of thing. And I was maybe a wee bit smug up to this point, like if I'm going to be truly honest, because my family background, I came from a broken home. Pretty much all the men in my family are pretty absent, and it's a family run by matriarchs, and I always was quite pleased with myself that I'd managed to find this incredible man who was so godly and so just awesome. He was class. And then all of a sudden I just thought, I can't do this. Like, I can't be a single mum, and I can't run our business on my own. And I started really even just doubting myself and my own capabilities. And again, I just felt like God came in and he said, you get to choose. You get to choose yourself what you're going to allow to happen to you right now. Are you just going to lie down and give up, or are you going to get up and fight?
So obviously there's a whole practicality thing you're just alluding to around family and business,
yeah.
But can you talk a wee bit, maybe practically as well, what does it look like, you know, to keep following Jesus in the midst of this? Over the next 18 months,
yeah.
You know, what did that look like practically,
yeah.
Even, or can we give us glimpses into that?
I suppose in many ways I was pregnant, so I kind of had this thing where I didn't really have a choice. If I loved the child that was growing inside me, I needed to keep going, because it was strange, because you know, some people, I'm sure some of you guys have felt this, if you're stressed you can't eat. That was never ever the way for me ever. I was like, I'd like be fully getting the donuts stuck in if I was stressing. But this was different. This was grief, and this was desperation like I'd never felt, and just the will had just gone from me completely. Like, I couldn't eat, and people were like putting this food down in front of me, and people were nearly like wanting to spoon feed me, because I was just so, I had no appetite at all, and I just felt like I can't do this. But then there was always this wee sort of thing keeping me going. It was this wee baby. And who's this wee baby going to be? It turned out to be a little boy, by the way, who was born in May. And that was just absolutely wretched as well, like thinking, how am I going to give birth to this baby on my own? Because, you know, anyone watch One Born Every Minute? Or how, all the guys are like, they're always guys in that, and they're like sitting there and they're like, texting and like just playing like Candy Crush or something when their wives are in labour. And that was never ever Craig. Like when I had Isabel, he was like right in the thick of it. He was incredible. And I just couldn't stop thinking about this, thinking, how am I going to have this baby without this guy with me who like basically supported me through everything? And I guess this is where the fear set in. Because I suppose Craig and I got together whenever I was 17. It was actually my 17th birthday, give or take, a few days. And he had always been there, and he was like this guy who was just like kind of a natural born leader, and he would always rise to the surface of everything. So if there was like a prayer circle and everyone's just looking at the ground, he would be the one to like offer forward, throw himself on the sword and pray first, you know, he was that kind of guy. And he would be the person to put his hand up to volunteer to do something, and he wasn't one to kind of want to look for the limelight, but he just embodied leadership. And I suppose for me it was quite easy to not to live in his shadow, but to kind of get into a slipstream. And then all of a sudden he's gone, and I'm asking myself this question of, so what of me, and what of this business that, you know, God did call us to begin this business together. He called us to do it. He called Craig to do it until December 2014. But for me, then the question was, well, what do I do now? And some people did actually say to me, you know, the situation you're in is horrible, so I assume you'll be selling the business or folding it or passing it on to somebody else. And that just made me absolutely go boogaloo, because I was like, don't tell me what to do. But then in the back of my mind, I thought, oh, no, I don't think I can do this on my own. And thankfully, I don't have to do it on my own, because, like I said, you know, we work as part of a team, so our colleague Johnny basically carried the business while I was on maternity leave, which happened then. But I went back to work 3 weeks after Craig died, and I still don't know how I managed to do that, but I think I was mostly just sitting at my desk staring at it, like at the computer. But I just had to keep going, because you're self-employed, you've got to do it.
We're thinking about transformation this weekend. This is obviously, you know, we're thinking about obviously Jesus transformed us in positive ways, and this isn't a way you would ever choose to be, have your life transformed. But do you want to talk about, are you able to talk about just how Jesus has been transforming you still in the midst of this?
Yeah, totally. I suppose I kind of alluded to it there a minute ago, just this sense of always shying away from kind of taking ownership of things that God had called me to do, because it was easier to kind of let Craig take charge. And there was always a wee part of me that kind of hated that, because I'm all like, ooh, women in leadership, and like women in business, and it's something I feel very passionately about. And then suddenly I'm given this opportunity to kind of do something about that, and I want to run a mile. But I guess I feel like God has, he's shown me that he will always be in the midst of everything. So my biggest fear, if you'd have asked me a couple of years ago, what is your biggest fear in the whole world, I would have told you straight away, without a beat, Craig dying. And it's kind of like almost hilarious, if you have a dark sense of humour like me, that it actually happened, because I genuinely promise you, I'm not spoofing at all. Like, that's what I would have said. That was my worst fear. So then this sort of new thing was birthed in me, because it was like a sense of kind of like a good recklessness, if you know what I mean, where my worst fear had come to fruition. So what did I have to fear anymore? And I had always been a person that was quite subject to fear, the kind of person that would bow out of things, because if you start feeling the heart going, like, oh, no, I can't do that, somebody else will be brave and they'll do it. And I suppose I would have volunteered to do things I was a wee bit more comfortable with, but anything outside the comfort zone, I probably would have shied away from. And then suddenly when your worst fear comes true, all those things kind of pale in comparison. So I feel a lot like in this last year, I've done things that I never ever knew that were possible, but I've done them entirely through just God upholding everything, like 100%. It's been not my own strength at all, because how could I? How could I do anything? Like, I can't believe I'm sitting here. Like, this is kind of hilarious. I know, like, hardly any of you guys know me, but I am not a public speaker. I don't do this. And I'm only, I just said yes because Rick asked me, and I thought, This is my year of just saying yes to everything that comes across my way, that if it scares you, do it. Because when you're subject to fear, as I was prior to Craig dying, like, what opportunities did I miss out on? And a lot of friends have said to me, they say things like, he'd be very proud of you and how you've coped and how you've got on with things. But one of my very closest friends said to me last week, she said, I hope you don't take this the wrong way, but he wouldn't know you because you've changed so much this year, but it's all been growth, it's all been positive, it's been, you're kind of growing into the person that God wants you to be. And you know, it's the kind of thing that only your best friend can get away with saying to you, you know, he wouldn't know you, but I know that he kind of knew that it was that fear that was kind of holding me back.
So a couple of questions.
Yeah.
You were, I don't know what you tell it, you were talking a little bit about maybe some Bible passages that have been specifically helpful or challenging and all that. Do you want to talk about a couple of those?
I do. Yeah, I'm awful at remembering Bible verses. Sorry, guys, it's just definitely not my forte. But when they go in, they stick there, but the references never do. There was this thing that just kept coming back to me over and over again as I thought about this, and I hope sincerely that what has happened to me never happens to any of you guys, but maybe it will. Actually, if any of you get married, there's probably a 50% chance that it will happen to you at some point. I just hope it doesn't happen to you when you're 29. But there's this verse in John 16:33, when Jesus is talking to his disciples, and it is just basically just before he goes to the cross. And he's kind of forewarning them of what's to come. And he talks a lot about grief and about how they will mourn and their mourning will be turned to joy. But this really jumped out at me. It said, in this life you will have troubles, but take heart, for I have overcome the world. And there were two words in that kind of popped out at me. In this life you will have troubles. Nobody's going to have a charmed life because we live in a world that has fallen. And I guess maybe that's why I'm not angry, because I never thought for a second that I was going to make it all the way through life unscathed. And, you know, how can any of us live in this world? All we need to do is, like, spend 5 minutes looking around us to realise that, you know, this is short of glory. This is not the way it's meant to be. And the other word that jumped out was but. In this life you will have trouble, but take heart, for I have overcome the world. And again, it's just that feeling of a crossroads. We get to choose how we respond when these things happen to us. Like I said earlier, you can choose to curl up and die effectively yourself. And I don't think anybody would have blamed me this year if I had just given up on everything, if I had turned my back on what I said I believed and become some kind of fair weather Christian. Because, you know, everybody kept saying to me, oh, you've been through such an awful time. And then in some ways I kind of thought, well, you know, who hasn't in a way? And I think a week after Craig died, there was a really terrible massacre in Nigeria. And I couldn't stop thinking about this. It was a Boko Haram. And it was awful. It was so bad. And I was like crying. Obviously, I spent like weeks basically in an eternal state of crying. And not the kind, I can't compare, you know, you don't say, oh, well, your sense of loss is worse than mine and vice versa, but it was just this sense of this world is just, it's a mess, but Jesus has come, he has overcome the world. And he was saying this, you know, he was saying this before he'd gone to the cross. It was the promise of, you know, all that he was to bring for us. And like, that is that not kind of what this is all about? And I suppose, for me, I feel like even though what has happened to me is just the worst thing I could have ever imagined, in some ways it's kind of legitimised what I believe, because I still can stand here and say God is good. And some days, like, you say it through gritted teeth, because it's not easy bringing up two kids on your own, especially when the older one, you know, ask questions about her daddy, and you have to kind of find a way to speak to her that's appropriate. But over and over again, I just have to come back again to, you know, to Christ, and you know, he's redeemed all of humanity. He's redeemed us all. My time is not yet. Craig's time has been. all our times will come and we will suffer in some shape or form. Like I say, I really hope none of you go through what I've been through, but it's all legitimate and God cares about all of it. I see you like shaking your mic. What's this? Yeah. There was just a verse in Philippians. Michael Wiley will love this because he loves this verse. Where are you? Philippians 4:13. The verse is, I can do all things through him who gives me strength. And I'm sure a lot of you have heard it. And it's one of those kind of like bumper sticker, kind of like super cool Christian things that people love to say. And to me, verses like that drove me absolutely up the walls after Craig died because I just find them so vapid. So then I started reading around because I love context, and Paul's writing and he's saying, I know what it is to be in need and I know what it is to have plenty. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all things through him who gives me strength. And to me, those prior verses are more important almost than the one that comes after, like the doozy, you know, because it's all about, he's basically making the point that he can be content no matter what life throws at him. And I'm looking at Paul and going, can I get a wee bit of that, please? Because there are a lot of days whenever I don't feel like that at all. And that sense of being in want, I suppose I can sit here and say God is good, but I would be lying if, you know, if I told you that I didn't sit at home like gutted about what's happened to me and like aching, because that's kind of what's meant to happen whenever you lose somebody that you love, and that's okay. But I can do all things through him who gives me strength, and I have to believe that. And it's a journey. I hate to use that word, it's such a cliche. I'm on a journey, we're all on journeys. But
you're gonna
sing, I feel like the key change is coming, right? It's coming.
We honestly could listen. We could listen to you all night. I think Sharon. But to draw this to a close, there's 100 plus young adults from across the whole Presbyterian Church. Something that you've been part of for a while, yeah. Yourself. What would you want to say to them as you finish? What might you be able to pass on or leave with us?
Okay. So I suppose I was praying about this as you do, you know, before you come and do something like this, and there was just something that could not get out of my head, and I felt like this is what I need to share with you guys. This is part of my story, but I think it's probably a part of other people's stories as well, in various shapes and sizes. Here's the verse, the hook, 2 Timothy 1:7. For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power, love, and a sound mind. So when Craig died, the world's message to me was fear, despair, heartbreak, harrowing horror. And I have family members who, I pretty much come from a non-Christian family. My mum and my brother are the only people who believe. And my family's response to Craig's death was horrific. It was just, it was so, so different to Craig's family. Basically, we're all Christians. And that sense of hope. And even though, yeah, we're human, so we are afraid of things that, you know, come at us. But there was just this overriding hope that just was in the middle of everything. And I suppose I still kind of battle with the fear. I've now got a new set of fears on my hands in the sense, in a very practical sense, that what Craig died from was a genetic disorder, so there's a 50% chance that both of our children may have the same thing. Which we will not know until they're in their teens, unfortunately. And I have to just surrender that to God every day, because I do that thing. I don't know if any of you have kids, but if you do, it's a cliche. You watch your kids whenever they're sleeping and you think they've stopped breathing, and you're all like the freaky hovering parent, like poking them to make sure they're still breathing. But that is actually a very legitimate fear for me, and I have to say every day, for God has not given me a spirit of fear, but of power, love, and a sound mind. And some days I'm like, no thanks. But most times, I say most times, I just have to keep coming back to it and just saying, God, I can't do this on my own, so you're going to need to do it for me. And I suppose to all of you guys, like, I feel like I don't want to leave you on a downer. I kind of want to inspire you that no matter what life throws at you, God is bigger than that, because he's the creator of the universe, and he knows you and he loves you and he cares about the most minute of your fears and the absolute biggest. And but he has given you power, love and a sound mind if you just keep chasing after it and going to him to deal with it, because we can't do it in our own strength. And I guess I just hope that's landed somewhere. But thank you for listening.
Connie, you have a lot to teach us, and you're remarkable. And I want to thank you for doing what you've just done. So thank you.